Good morning. Welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local minister at the Harrodsburg Church of Christ, and we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. We hope you'll become a regular listener each time on Sunday morning at this time. We also, at the end of our broadcast, will give you some meeting times of our regular services at Harrodsburg, and we cordially invite you to any or all of these services. You will always be warmly received. We are looking at the book of Revelation. Presently, we are looking at chapter number 2 and examining one by one the seven churches of Asia. Last week, we examined the church at Ephesus, and today we are going to look at the second church, and that's the church at Smyrna. Smyrna was located about 40 miles directly north of Ephesus. The location of the first of the seven churches mentioned in this geographical area of Asia Minor. It was favored as a Greek colony as way back as 1000 BC, but it had been destroyed in 600 BC and rebuilt by 200 BC, and when it was rebuilt as a well-planned city with straight and broad streets. During Roman times, it surpassed Ephesus both as a seaport and a training center. Smyrna was more than a large city. Many considered it to be the most brilliant city in Asia Minor. Claimed to be the first city of Asia, first in beauty, literature, and first in loyalty to Rome. It had been the first city to erect a temple to the goddess Roma and to the spirit of Rome. Smyrna had been a center for Caesar worship. In fact, Roman emperors had become so popular and powerful that Caesar worship began to be enforced. Naturally, this would present a tremendous threat to genuine Christians who could neither conscientiously nor scripturally ascribe to Caesar their love and loyalty which solely belongs to God. Being a Christian in Smyrna would certainly put one's life in jeopardy. This would lead us to believe that people lacking courage, character, and commitment were not receptive to the truth in that region. Schools in science and medicine were widely acclaimed. A citadel commanding forces to defend the city stood on the mountain, called the Golden Line Palace. The temples of Cybele and Acropolis adjoined the palace. These temples girded the mountains, glittering like a crown. Thus, the city was often referred to as the Crown City. The city of worship of Dionysus, originally nature god of fruitfulness and vegetation, who eventually became the god of wine. Mock, death, burial, and resurrection of Dionysus were celebrated annually. Proud of Roman connection and favored by Rome, chosen by the Roman Senate in 26 AD as a site for the new temple for the worship of the Roman Emperor Tiberius. Smyrna also contained a large population of influential Jews who were hostile to the church. Moreover, these Jews were able to get laws passed so that Christians could no longer belong to labor unions. That undoubtedly would contribute to the material poverty that the early Christians suffered. Let's look at the poor church that was rich as we read this letter in chapter 2, verses 8 through 11. And to the angel of the church of Smyrna write, "These things says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say that they are Jews and they are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, and you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. But be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." Now, in this particular letter, it begins with Christ describing himself as the angel or the messenger, the first and the last who was dead and came to life. This would show the mocking false worship of Dionysus, that they had a mock burial, death, and resurrection to show that there was only one true and living God. Showing the only one which can make these claims and back them up was Jesus Christ, not the God made with hands. Showing his complete deity, He was not a created being. He is eternal, according to John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. But he did die, according to his own words, in John 19, verse 30, when he uttered, "It is finished," and then the spirit departed from the body. He did return from the grave. That was even prophesied about in Psalm 16, verse 8 through 10. And we have the account in Matthew 28, verse 1 through 6, when the women came to the tomb and the stone was rolled away and the grave was empty. We know from passages like Romans 1, verse 4, this was God's demonstration and the highest explanation point that he indeed was declared to be the Son of God with power. The resurrection was the crowning miracle of the Bible, and it justified all the claims that Jesus made of his deity. Please read 1 Corinthians 15, 1-8. For him to be dead once shows the truth concerning his birth. One must live before they can die. The proper propitiation for our sin was paid for by the suffering servant. In verse 9, he commends this church for some very positive traits. "I know thy works." Again, the Lord is aware of the things they are doing, depending on your relationship with him. It's frightening or encouraging, depending on which side of the ledger you're on. No one can fool the Son. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 13, everything is naked and open before his sight. Good or evil, right or wrong, apathetic, on fire, committed, not committed, all of it's known to be sure by the Lord. In verse 9, he says, "Your tribulation and your poverty, oppression, pressure, and distress, and the straits of the saints, he was aware of." He knew the tribulation, and it should not be strange to Christians. We were warned about that in the New Testament in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. "Yes, all that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." And we should not think it strange, according to 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse number 16. God knew of the problems of his people in Egypt, and he sent Moses to remedy that problem in Exodus chapter 3. The trials of all kinds that Christians go through, God knows. The adversity and the persecution can only hurt us if we allow it to do so. Also, they were experiencing poverty. Many reasons could lead to one's poverty. Many of the lower class of society, some became slaves. Also, they had been excluded from trade unions, as we mentioned earlier, and that could lead to their poverty. And because of their faith, it was inevitable that they would come in conflict with Rome, who demanded emperor worship, which they would not, of course, agree to. And for that reason, some suffered the spoiling of their goods. We read that in Hebrews 10, verse 34. How difficult it is for Christians to handle prosperity. 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, the Apostle Paul warned that the love of money was the root of all evil. Now, they might have been poor and in poverty in a physical sense, but God says they were rich in the spiritual sense. Amazing paradox, is it not? Poor, but yet they're rich. The truth that they were both poor and rich at the same time. Rich in faith, James 2, verse 5, had all spiritual blessings in Christ, Ephesians 1 and verse number 3, and they had their treasure in heaven and not on earth, Matthew 6, verse 20. Does one's life consist of the things that they possess? Jesus said they don't in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. He also commends them the blasphemy that those were speaking against them, the blasphemy of those who said they were Jews and are not. Men called them cannibals, observance of the Lord's Supper, accusing them of tampering with family relationship. Christianity often split families. Jesus warned us about that in Matthew 10:36. Accused of being atheists and had no images or idols in heathens. Accused of political disloyalty to Caesar. And of course they would, because they were faithful and just to God. These were Jews by race, according to the flesh, yet they gave them no advantage under the new law, according to Romans chapter 2, verse 28 through 29. We need to be Abraham's spiritual descendants by walking in his steps of faith. Read Romans chapter 4, verse 12, and also Galatians 3, 27 through 29. This did not make it easy to be a Christian in Smyrna, but yet God was aware of their poverty. God was aware of their persecution, and he was aware of their tribulation, and he commends them for their steadfast adherence and allegiance to the Lord. But in verse 10 and 11, he gives them some consolation. Fear none of the things which you are about to suffer. They probably figured they had already suffered all they could, but more is coming. You don't fear that. Fear God, not the physical problems. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus warned that we should not fear the one that can kill the body, but fear the one that can cast both body and soul into hell. We need to understand that God should be one of our chief concerns, not men. Acts chapter 5, verse 29, Paul said we ought to obey God. Excuse me, Peter said we ought to obey God rather than men. In Ecclesiastics, Solomon summed it up for us very nicely, that the whole conclusion of the matter is to fear God and keep His commandments. Protection was in peril. They needed strength. They needed care. They needed to have their faith strengthened. And God sought to do that through this letter. He even tells them in verse 10 that some of them are about to be thrown into prison. Herein the Lord identifies the real enemy. These men were workers of Satan who followed his agenda. The devil is our adversary, 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. He is the real accuser of the brethren, as we will read later on in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 10. Yet he must be resisted, and we must hold steadfast in the faith, according to Peter in 1 Peter 5 and verse 9. Satan's influence is going to cause them to be tested. 10 days is used symbolically, perhaps in the sense that it was going to be a definite number to represent an indefinite yet limited time and duration. They're going to be persecuted, but it's only going to be for a time. He commends them to be faithful unto death. In this context, it means until death. Did not simply mean to be faithful until you die of natural causes at a ripe old age. In that instance, these brethren were being told to be faithful, even though it may mean death by martyrdom, to the point of death and the face of death. This was a real possibility, and it did happen in the first century. Could these brethren sympathize with Christians today who want to quit the church because someone is receiving more attention than they are? I doubt it. And it's my suggestion that these men and women were not just hypothetically being put to death for their faith. It was actually happening. Crowns were common in Smyrna, given to victorious athletes. Men who had faithfully served as magistrates, heathens, wore crowns or chaplets of flowers at the banquets. Yet never forget, this is one of the most important things of this letter. Why? The Lord is the only one that can give us the crown of life. He's the only one that can give us the victory crown. And that's what we should be striving for, 1 Peter 1, verse 3 and 4. But the greatest consolation he gives them, that they shall not be hurt by the second death. Those are overcomers who remain faithful. They don't quit. They serve no matter what the cost, even if it means their death. Amazingly, those who risk physical death in their efforts to be faithful are the ones that can't be hurt by the eternal death and eternal separation from God that will come upon those who are unrighteous and ungodly and unprepared to meet God in the last day. Read Revelation 20, verse 11 through 15. These men and women were willing to suffer to the fullest in order to receive the crown of life. Dear listener, are you willing to give that much of yourself in order to gain the crown of life that the Lord will give to the faithful on that last and final day when He judges the world? We hope so. Tune in again next week as we will continue our study of the seven churches of Asia. Thank you.